Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Other Minds and Hands. This is episode number 72, and I am joined, as always, by Maggie Park, sitting in front of a lush Welsh background, which is far superior to her actual setting, which is a hotel room.
I would turn off my background, but guys, it's just a grim,
it's very grim.
Just this is my backyard in Wales. This is way better.
I remember once when I was broadcasting from a hotel room, and somebody was like, "Are you in prison?"
I did a convention center a couple years ago, and people were like, "What is that?"
That's right. Yeah.
I'm like, Although my favorite still, we're already distracted, Jordan. This is our standard. Do you remember when I was doing it from the airport?
Yes.
Kind of a green.
Like sitting against against the wall. Yeah.
It was like a bright green background. It's just a wall. And I was like, I have a green screen.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, in any case, we're joined today by Jordan Rennells. Jordan Rennells, who is the creator of the long expected soundscape. And many of you may know Jordan as the person to whom Alan Sisto is constantly apologizing on the Prancing Pony podcast. He is the sound engineer and editor of the Prancing Pony podcast. Welcome, Jordan. So good to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to chat and hang out. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So what we're going to be talking about today, I was so delighted to have Jordan. Many people might not even know about the soundscape work that Jordan does. But I'm really excited to talk to Jordan today and kind of go through this with everybody. Jordan, one of the things we've been talking a lot about on this show recently, we've been kind of doing it all along, but recently we've been doing more, like trying to build a vocabulary and really discuss how, like, so for instance, people often will say things like, well, you can't really, you know, you can't do the same things in one medium that you can do in another medium. So when you're, you know, when you're trying to adapt book to film, like you have to use some like different language to do this. And so we've been going through some analyses and trying to build a vocabulary to understand better, like, you know, how do you tell the story in film? You know, how is the film doing this compared to how the book is doing this, so that we can really, you know, come to understand how the two different stories work in their different modes. I'm really excited to talk to you because your mode is entirely different from both of those things, right? And so thinking about this same kind of paradigm, like how do you do, because what you do clearly is storytelling in audio, like wordless storytelling in audio form, right? And it's clearly related to the work that people are a little more familiar with, or at least you know, more used to interacting with, which is like movie soundtracks, right?
Yeah.
But what you do is even a little bit, in a sense, more holistic than that. So let's just start by you kind of talking about what it is you do. Tell us about your soundscapes and what it is and kind of how that emerged and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So it all kind of starts back when I was younger, and listening to audiobooks was always my kind of go-to way of consuming things. And I listened to an unofficial version of The Lord of the Rings that was had sounds and had music from the movies and things like that. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. This is how I wish every audiobook was. That was my initial reaction. And then, you know, getting into some of the Star Wars audiobooks, they do that kind of thing too. But I was always let down a little bit by how imprecise some of it was. You know, we have this library of John Williams music and we're going to use it, but we only have maybe like 10 different you know, samples that we'll use, and they'll fit into an action scene, and then the same sound will go into this other action scene and things like that. Right. And I was like, wow, it'd be so much better if it was treated as if it was a movie, and so you spot the whole thing. You know, in this scene we have these emotions and these instruments and things like that. So all of that led to me doing a Kickstarter, which gave me the kind of funding and the time to go through The Lord of the Rings, you know, scene by scene, and design sound effects and design ambient environments, and to write and compose a score for all 63 hours worth of the audiobooks. And I used the Andy Serkis audiobook as the original reference for it. So everything falls in time exactly with that audiobook. Now, since I've finished, I've retimed it to Rob Inglis as well. So they're both lined up, and they're both kind of included in the package now, which is awesome. And they're totally different feels, which is really, really interesting. But the part that I love the most about it is that you don't need the narration at all. You can just listen to the soundscape on its own, and you can hear the whole journey from start to finish, and you can, you know, here comes Gandalf up the hill, and there's his fireworks, and you can hear all these things happening around you. And it was just a lot of fun to, you know, create what I think of as the extended version of the movies, you know, the kind of proper version, if you want to call it that. You know, I don't have to cut anything. Now, in an ideal world, I would separate the audiobooks and put spaces in between scenes and things like that. But for this, I just synced it up exactly with the audiobook. And yeah, there's a bunch of different versions of it. Like, you can listen to just the ambience, you can listen to everything, you can listen to just the score. And then that's kind of perpetuated me into taking the idea into, right now I'm working on The Hobbit, and The Silmarillion will come later. And I'm also working on The Wheel of Time right now, and I finished the first Harry Potter book, and I'm working on the second one, so it's a lot of fun.
just a few projects.
That's right.
It's fun to be able to switch between them, though, because they're, as we might talk about later, even the small discussion of perspective is vastly different between those projects, and I've started doing a little tiny bit of work on A Song of Ice and Fire as well, and it's wildly different in that compared to all the others as well. So it's nothing but an endless fun challenge. And I'm super enthusiastic about, you know, each element individually. So I'm excited to get the sounds. I'm excited to record Foley of the movement. I'm excited to write music for these things. And then I'm also excited for the technology aspect of it, because I'm using, you know, as modern of technology as I can get my hands onto, which a lot of it isn't. I've hit snags along the way because some of it isn't implemented in the way that I want it to be yet. A good example is Apple Music supports spatial audio. So I can put these earbuds in and can kind of move around and look around, and things can move in 3D. But podcast feeds don't support that yet. So that's kind of a hiccup to me, because I'm held back by the current technology almost. So, because it's just not something that people are really exploring yet, it seems. Like, there's a couple productions on Audible that are starting to do this finally. But a lot of the time, those things are rendered in what we call binaural audio, which is just stereo audio. But when it's a full Dolby Atmos file like I have, it's a totally different experience. And it's almost too bad, because I'm just waiting, and there's an Apple event tomorrow, so fingers crossed. But I have a version of the soundscape that even the people that have experienced it have not gotten the full experience of it yet. And I'm just waiting for the technology to, like, let me share it. So it's
so cool. Anyways. Yeah, and I will say, even even just with the version that you have, I mean, so I always, and by the way, we should say, so we're gonna go on to play some of your stuff later on. So anyone who is listening to this, not like with your, you know, earbuds in and stuff, like, you're going to be missing out on a lot of stuff. I usually listen on my noise canceling headphones, and Jordan, it's so funny. There's so many times I'll be listening to, yeah, I've been listening through the Fellowship of the Ring, and I'm doing something, right? And I'll like turn around. I'm hearing like a door closing behind me, and I'm like, who is that? I'm like,
four, I think. Like,
yes.
Has a very clear door knock, and I look around.
Yes.
Yeah. You never do a soundscape for horror. I can't handle that.
Oh man. Yeah, no, it's the effect. I mean, it's I don't even remember like listening to an audio file where I'm like, I'm hearing sounds behind me, you know, when I, it's so cool. Yeah. It's really neat.
Yeah, there's so much you can do, and that's why I'm so excited about it. Because and even now, I'm starting to go, kind of go back into Lord of the Rings, and you know, I've learned a lot going through all those 60 some hours worth of audio, especially for the ambiences. There's some techniques that I've learned along the way that I just finished up designing all of the 89 ambiences for the first Wheel of Time book. And I'm just so much more confident in those. I love what I did for The Lord of the Rings, but looking back at it, I'm like, ah, oh, I've just, there's new things that I know how to do now. And that's the kind of beauty of anyone that purchases the product or anything, is that I'll just keep revising it as we go, you know, so you just keep getting newer and newer, and people will comment, you know, hey, can we, you know, we're missing this sound here or something like that, and I can put it in and release a new version and things like that. So keep working at it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you could tell, like, Corey and I's lighting up while you were talking. Like, wait, you're doing that series? Wait, you're doing that series too?
Exactly. Yeah, and I personally, you know, respect and relate to the idea that you're just like, yeah, I'm going to do, like, as a little side project, I'm going to embark on, like, the 500-hour unabridged audiobook version of The Wheel of Time, you know? So, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, if I could spend all my time doing The Wheel of Time, I would. So I'm down.
That's
great. Yeah. Awesome. So let's kind of dig into what it looks like a little bit. Can you show us a little bit? Because I want people to first, even before we hear it, to kind of walk us through what is it like. What is a soundscape? What is involved? You've talked about ambient stuff. You've talked about music. You've talked about Foley stuff. Can you sort of show us how this how this works?
Definitely. So,
and how it differs from some of the stuff we might know. So we've had questions about, like, how is this different from a radio drama and stuff like that. So, you know, taking us through some of that technicals, we'll probably explain it.
Yeah. In a nutshell, and I'll open it up here, the detail is the key to the difference. So I'm meticulously going through each scene, and I'm listing what are the sound effects in this scene, what are the ambient environments that we're in this scene. Are there footsteps? Are people moving? All of these types of things, and then the same conversation with music, and then what we'll get into later in this conversation, which would be, okay, all of those things might be there, but that doesn't mean we need to hear them all, or hear them all at the same volume, or realistic volume, or whatever that conversation might be.
Right. Like, you don't want people actually having to shout over people at the pub, right?
Exactly. Because that's what it would be. You know, exactly. And I had conversations with Brett Devereaux about, who's a military historian who's talked a lot about the battles and things. And talking about, like, the Ride of the Rohirrim would be, like, deafeningly loud if it was realistic. So you got to kind of play with the realism of it and whatnot. So let's see here. Can we see
this? Yes.
Great. So this is Battle of the Pelennor Fields. And as you can see up here, we have this track right here is Andy Serkis. And each one of these markers here, the colored markers falling down, are scene changes or significant timeline things where different things happen, like the Fell Beast arrives or Eowyn laughs, you know, things like that are all just significant moments that I need to make sure I can see and catch.
Is that your first step in your process to go through and kind of mark those?
Map it.
Yeah, I go through, and that is one of the processes that has evolved the most. Mm. So with Wheel of Time now, I have everything very clearly laid out scene by scene in folders. So I can open up scene one and look at all the things that are there, et cetera, et cetera. It was a little, unfortunately, more chaotic when I was doing this for Lord of the Rings. But it's still all there. It's just not organized in a way that I would prefer now. But yeah, so I have... close this up. Yeah, here's a good example. Whoa. All of these, so this is maybe 10 or so tracks right here. And those are all just, you know, siege movement type sounds to get the essence of the battlefield there. So we have, you know, trebuchet movements and things like that that are kind of low in the mix, but they're all in there to get the environment. There's tons and tons of tracks. Oh my gosh. Creature sounds. So those are all orcs. And a lot of those came from people that backed the Kickstarter, actually. So they sent in some
people got to record orc sounds.
That's great.
So that's all there. Other battlefield sounds. Yeah, this is all... there's arrow firings, you know, swords clashing and things like that. This is a render of all of that actually put together.
So how many tracks are there total? Ooh, I mean, you just keep going.
Yeah, I don't know in total. There might be like 30 orc tracks in alone.
Yeah.
It's so funny, Jordan, when you started off, like when you first opened, when you first started sharing, I was like, oh, that's a little complicated. And I didn't realize that each one of those things was like 40 was like nested hidden tracks.
Yeah, well, here, like if I open up this one, this is the horses.
Those are the horses?
Yeah, I'll make it smaller.
Oh my God.
Wow.
How many horses are on the field?
More than I have there. Okay. But there's
now I'm just crazy curious. How do you do all like horses or orcs? Like orcs people submitted. Are you creating these sounds? Are you recording horses?
So I have there's a balance between what I record and what I have libraries for. So I'm not sure if you know who Mark Mangini is, but he's the sound designer for Blade Runner 2049 and Dune and the new Dune. And he has a sound effect library that I've purchased with the Kickstarter. So that's a source of a lot of things. A lot of the Foley, it doesn't work for, it just doesn't, you know, I have to do that myself. But I also spent a ton of time taking those samples and putting them into tools that will randomize them in ways that are satisfying. So I have, we'll see if I can pull this up. Yeah, it's, can you see that or yeah. No?
Yes.
The pop-up? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so this is a good example, and it's not loading everything right now, but it's called Weaponizer. And you can put a starting sound, the body, the thump, and the tail. So four different elements of a sound. And when you hit the fire button, it will play them all back to back. But what's really cool is that you can add multiple samples for each segment. So when you hit it, it will randomize which ones it chooses. So every time I hit it, it'll be a different type of arrow shot or a different type of horse neigh. It'll trigger all these things kind of at random, and then you do that over a long period of time and it starts to build the battlefield, you know? So a lot of things like that, taking samples and figuring out how to manipulate them on a large scale so that repetition isn't a thing or it's not a noticeable thing. And
I can't wait to talk to you about, like, you know, inspiration and adaptation theory and all that, but I think we're all just so gobsmacked at the production process. Like, there's a comment here from Alan. Before this started, I still had in my head a bloke behind a microphone with a couple of coconuts to make the horse sounds Monty Python style. Like, we didn't know this existed. This is amazing.
There's quite a lot to it, and there's a lot of... You know, people have asked in the past, what's the most difficult part of the process? And my answer for that is always, like, the conceptualizing of it is the hardest part. Putting in horse sounds is easy compared to figuring out when to hear the horses and when to have the score and when not to and all those types of questions. Right. And just handling the scale of it is a lot more difficult.
Right. So, I mean, like, so actually, hang on a second. Could you just practically walk us through that step for a moment? So, like, right here, what we're looking at the siege sounds, right, is the sort of the main bar that you have open there. Yep. And I see you have there are two gaps, right? There's the big gap, the gap down there, and then the gap up in the second section there. So, there's this group of segments of the text where you have. Mm-hmm. Stop that. Could you like kind of walk through those decisions?
Totally. So a good example right here is that you can see up at this marker here. This is where Mary stabs the Witch King.
Okay.
And so the score takes over for a lot of this. Right. So there's a lot less, and you can see right here, especially a lot of these battlefield sounds fall away.
Right.
Because the score takes over there for the most part, and we should be able to see. You can see here, these are all volume automations, so it pulls down there overall. So even if there's still sound there, it comes down in volume as well. So again, it's like laying out the whole canvas and then being like, okay, let's pull this out here, let's pull this out here, etc., etc. And then if we go over to this scene,
this is conducting a symphony. I mean, this is knowing whatever
for the music and the sound effects and the ambience.
Exactly. Yeah. The symphony of which is composed of like 57 horses among other things.
Yeah.
Right. Cue the horses. Yeah.
Oh, man. It isn't about notes on a page. I mean, but I'm just thinking about your brain. Like you're not a sound editor here only. You are really an artist. Gathering emotion and storytelling and utilizing all these different tools like a conductor and a composer would for a symphony.
That's why the research phase of it is so important. And as we talk about this more later, it's a lot more of a thing, of an upfront thing in the Wheel of Time and A Song of Ice and Fire where, you know, what does Perrin hear versus Rand or versus Egwene? Because his hearing is better, and we're in his head, so we have to, you know, interpret those things. And maybe he won't hear as much music because he'll be hearing more ambience. So the mixes will be different, and just kind of those large scale conceptual questions are the things that take the most time and the most. Planning beforehand, and I'm going to keep talking about the Wheel of Time, but I'll try to stop.
Sorry, you're good.
Today I was talking, or today I was organizing the arcs for every character throughout all 14 books, because I have to know where we're headed, and to start hinting at things early, and have all that information in my head, so that when it comes to writing or organizing these sounds, I can plan ahead and make sure everything makes sense. So back to this, though. This is where Éomer does his charge, I believe. Yeah. And here's the death yell. So those are all people that backed the Kickstarter as well, which is fun.
That's great.
Yeah. I haven't opened up the score yet. I'll do that.
We haven't even gotten to the score.
I mean, when you said trebuchet tracks, I was like, what?
There's a whole section of trebuchet tracks.
Yeah.
Not a single
plural and very casual.
Yeah.
As you do.
Of course.
Yeah, as Eric was just saying, Maggie, in response to your comment about conducting a symphony, he says it's conducting a symphony made up of several layers of nested symphonies. Basically.
Yeah, totally. So I can't, there's no way for me to show the entire score on screen. There's just too much of it. And it's not organized in the way that I'd like, but you can see here, these are all choir elements here. These are string elements here, and we scroll down here, and there's these are all the orc sounds. So when I did the Lord of the Rings, I designed each orchestra to have a sound for each of the peoples of Middle-earth. So there was a hobbit orchestra, there was a orc orchestra, et cetera, et cetera. And then I would choose the instruments that fit that that type of people. So there's a lot more woodwinds and flutes in the hobbit orchestra compared to, you know, the dwarvish orchestra and things like that. So that the music will have a color to it as we progress through different perspectives and things like that.
Wow.
So yeah, and keeping in mind, of course, you know, this chapter is 46 minutes long or so. So that's like, well, nowadays that's like a third of a movie on its own.
Yeah.
But times 63 chapters, you know, there's a lot to think about and a lot to manage. And yeah, there's always thoughts of like, how deep do you go? How much detail do you add? And keeping in mind that there's two ways of listening to it, right? You can listen to it without the narration or with the narration. So when there is the narration, I have to make sure that it doesn't clash with the narrator as well.
Right.
You know, and it's not like a movie. There's no scenes where there's no narration. You know,
right.
It's always there. So I always have to work around it. So it's an interesting challenge, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. The places in film where they'll just let the score do the work. Right.
Yeah. Of course, I don't get to do that.
Right. I mean, it makes me think of the Dune film. Right. And the comments you know, Villeneuve's comments about dialogue. Right. And yes, in audiobook soundscaping, there is no scope for silence. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the reverse of that, I have to make sure that it works totally without it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a weird kind of balance, but it is, you know, the hope for me when I'm working on it is that I can turn off the narration, listen to it, and I can be like, oh yeah, here's this moment and here's this moment, and I can kind of be aware of the story without any of the words there. So it's interesting when there's, you know, it's easier in some scenes when there's a lot of action. You can tell what's moving and what's happening and things like that. But, you know, when we get something like The Shadow of the Past...
I was actually just going to ask about that. Would it be possible for us to see... Because, like, obviously, this is the Battle of Pelennor Field, right? So there's a lot happening here. You know, like the whole trebuchet
yeah.
section, for instance, yeah. Right? What does the smaller one look like? Yeah. When it's something like The Shadow of the Past, it's just Frodo and Gandalf sitting in the study at Bag End talking.
Before we turn to that, can I ask one more question about this bit?
Totally, yeah.
Where is the focal point for the sound? Like, am I sitting on a horse listening to the battle around me, or are you
depends
kind of
on where we are in the chapter.
Yeah. Okay, so the perspective matches to where the perspective is.
Yeah, so a good example of that is in the Siege of Gondor. We get these descriptions of the battle and things like that, but you're Pippin.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like way far away. So you're not going to hear a lot of that detail. So it's fun to then be like, okay, so we're not going to hear a ton of that detail. It's still going to be there.
Yeah.
But that means the score gets to take focus instead. And a lot of that happens. So when I open up Shadow of the Past, that's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, instead of a ton of sound effects, we're going to switch to more score. But it also is a 63-hour movie. So when you're watching a movie, there's scenes that have to be downtime. We have to, like, relax for a bit, you know? So Shadow of the Past is a good example where, you know, we're a little bit calm because stuff's going to happen later. Another good example would be right after we get out of Moria. It's a very somber, music-heavy scene because we just had all this action, you know, so you got to think in the huge scale of it all. and kind of how it ebbs and flows throughout emotion-wise. But yeah, I'll open up Shadow of the Past.
This is also just, while you're opening, this is such a wonderful way for, I think, us to kind of share with our audience, too, of all the things we've been starting to talk about of different ways to tell a story. So I'm just really grateful for all the words that you're using of this is pacing. This is, you know, this is a different way to show emotion is by having a quiet moment or letting the music take over.
Yeah.
But all of
those
that
are too. The things that, because when I have thought all of that out, it makes writing the music relatively, I won't say, saying it's easy is not giving it the credit that it needs, but I'm never, I don't get writer's block with writing music because I've thought it all out beforehand and I know, you know, a toolbox of things, as Stephen King would say, of, you know, ways to get the emotion that I want out. So I just choose from that, you know, that I, the things that I want.
And because you've already worked out, like, you know, the thought process which emotions you're done. Going for. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't have to sit down and be like, oh, geez, what am I going to do for this scene? You know, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get to this scene because I'm going to do this in it kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
That's more of the thought process. Right. So, sorry, this takes a little bit to open.
I'm going to read
not
Eric
surprisingly.
Scott.
Yeah, so exactly. Well, one of the questions that came in is how huge are these files? It's supposed to be the biggest audio files ever. Right?
And he also said, ha ha, don't worry. No one thinks this seems easy.
Well, I will say, first of all, that some of it is way more time consuming than it is difficult. But that's what makes it worth it, I think, is to put all that time in. But. When I export the files, I have a lot of choice. So when I export them as binaural audio, they're not that big actually, because it's just a stereo file. If I were to export the full Dolby Atmos file, it would be hundreds of gigs for one chapter, because that's just how big they are. But I hope to soon be able to distribute 7.1.4 files that will connect to the AirPods and things like that in your speaker systems at home, and those ones will still be like a gig or two probably in size each, but it'll be worth it, you know.
And the editing file that you're using there, like the raw file, must be tremendous.
Yeah, I did a backup yesterday, and the whole. I think all of Lord of the Rings is like 2 terabytes worth of stuff. So.
But how many drives do you have going?
I have one. I have my drive that everything lives on, and then my backup drive that I put everything on. But we should stop talking about drives before I jinx stuff.
Yeah. Like
my
worst fear.
Okay, so this is Shadow of the Past. And thankfully, it's organized a little bit nicer because I've gone back a little bit. So you can see here are all the score pieces rendered down. So for each scene, it has a score that I've kind of reinserted back into the program so that my program can actually run, because I had to do all the score in its own session and then bring it over. Otherwise, it would just never run. So that's each score piece back to back. We have, this is the actual score, but it's all disabled. These are the sound effects, which are, as you can see, pretty minimal. We have the fire burning and Sam's shears and stuff like that.
It's funny, Jordan, this is the chapter I just finished reading, and there are moments, you know, as you were describing, there are moments where it does kind of like where I'm listening and I can forget that the sound is there at all. And then like a log will crack in the fire and I'll be like, whoa.
Yeah. That's awesome. But this is a good example, if we can talk really quickly about the score, where we have.
Which you compose, right?
Yep. 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 Let's get the names here. I think it's I can't remember which track it's in, but there's one where there's it's probably later on where I have the nine theme that plays. Mm-hmm. And it's fun taking that, and it'll connect eventually to, you know, Gandalf versus the Witch King eventually. And it's really fun to plan those things out score-wise and have, you know, just a little hint of it here, and then it grows and grows and grows later. But yeah, not too many sound effects in this. And then here's the ambiences down here, which are a little bit more specific than they were in the Pelennor. So we have Shire morning, Shire day, and then Shire evening. And a lot of this, like this was, this is the main piece. The ambiences are never one recording. They're multiples put together. But this main piece of this one was recorded at Algonquin Park, which is about, you know, 2-3 hour drive from where I am. So I went out there for a day and recorded. I have a 3D microphone that I brought, so I bring and record with that. You'll also, if you get to the Great River, all of the Anduin stuff in the boats, I actually put my mic in the boat, in the wooden canoe that I have, and canoed around with it. And I love those recordings. I think it sounds great. Because you can hear the paddle like hitting the side of the canoe and things like that around you. So it's a lot of fun for those sections, for sure.
Oh, and as a creator, to immediately take you back to the space where you're creating it, but also to create that reality for us listening to it. That's amazing.
Yeah, and the ambiences are also, like I said before, the part that I want to go back and do more with. I have a research team that, you know, we're working on outlining which areas would have which birds, so that I can put those individual ones in and kind of make them more separate with that. So it's an ever-growing thing.
Is Chad building a bird species spreadsheet?
I will not pretend that I don't ask Chad for many, many pieces of information. Yeah. So that's a little bit of Shadow of the Past. The important thing too I've found for working on this kind of thing is, again, doing all the planning beforehand so that I can but also separating out all of the elements as a task in itself. So if I look at the Wheel of Time, now that I've kind of rethought my thought process and have it all kind of a little bit clearer, I have folders that are dedicated to horse sounds. I have folders that are dedicated to Foley, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that I can open up a Wheel of Time chapter and be like, okay, I'm going to just do the horses today. And then tomorrow I'm just going to do the Foley. Or maybe I feel like only doing the music for this chapter, et cetera, like that, so that I'm not... Because if you open up a chapter and be like, okay, I'm going to do this chapter start to finish, there's too much. And yeah, you can lose so much time by being like, okay, I gotta find a sound for this ambience. So I do all my ambiences first now. So like I said, I did all of the ambiences, so they're done, not in the chapters. I've researched what they are and things like that, so that I can open up this chapter and be like, okay, we're in Emmons Field. I'm gonna import that ambience and it's all ready. Right. You know? And then I can go through the next one, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been going through those chapters and the chapters for The Hobbit and just doing everything that's a sound effect and not Foley. So all of the Foley is being put to the side and doing all sound effects. So anything that's human made counts as Foley, like anything that's human generated is Foley, so I just put those aside because I know that I have to do them specifically myself. And then I have a voice roll folder, which is for all the people that back the Kickstarter so that they can, you know, do orc sounds and things like that. But yeah, I think that kind of compartmentalizing each part of the process is vital, or I'll get lost in the detail of it. for sure.
It also kind of sounds like half of it is your organization, just so this becomes a manageable project. But I would imagine a lot of this is also creating the foundation for you as a creative process. So does doing the ambience first then lend itself to you understanding what needs to follow next because you're already in the space?
Yeah, the most recent start to finish example that I have of this now is doing Harry Potter. The first Harry Potter, which was so much fun. It was just a blast the whole time. But I did all of the ambiences first, and then I went and put all these sound effects in, and then I put in the Foley, and then I wrote the music. And then after that, I finally did all the footsteps as the last thing. And building it that way really, because when I'm putting in sound effects, I can hear how it sits in the ambience already, because that's already there. And then it really paints a picture, I guess you could say, of where the music is needed and where it's not. And I kind of do a spotting session for the music. So we're going to need it from here to here, not from here to here, and then here to here. And I do that with the sound effects and the ambience already in there, so that I can tell if the scene is okay without it, I think. But again, a lot of that stuff is pretty intuitive for me. I can kind of see it as a movie pretty clearly, so I can be like, okay, it feels right to have music here and not here. And I also, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't really worry about it too much in the moment. You know, I'll be like, yeah, I guess this is, you know, the sound that I'm going to go for, and if later it bugs me, then I'll change it. But I kind of go with whatever what my intuition leads me to, I guess. And a lot of the music was written that way, you know, because I know the characters so well. So I do a few tries at it, and I'm like, okay, I think that's cool. And again, later, if I'm like, meh, I'm not a big fan of it, then I'll change it. But for the most part, I was pretty satisfied with what I got initially, so...
And I assume that you're doing a lot of, like, you're talking about the different orchestras, right? So establishing the instrumentation, and so I assume that's another thing that you're kind of thinking out in advance before you begin?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, and you'll hear it when you get through to the Old Forest. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a Long Expected Soundscape starts chapter one with a big orchestra of... the Hobbit Orchestra. And, you know, there's certain things, like one of my guest musicians, I should say, played mandolin on those Hobbit chapters. And as soon as we get to the Old Forest, we lose the mandolin. It doesn't play anymore until the end, until Scouring of the Shire, actually, I think. So we lose a little bit of the orchestra there. And it shifts to woodwinds a little bit. And then, you know, as we progress, it becomes more strings because we're getting closer to the elves. The choir comes in, and we get all these kinds of movements of the orchestra, depending on what perspective we're in. And I had a lot of, you know, debate with myself about the perspective of the orchestra, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the elves show up in chapter three, do we hear their music on their instruments, or do we hear it on the hobbits' instruments? Because
right,
that's whose perspective we're on. So a lot of that kind of, you know, thinking through, and it really creates like a color of the story that means that if you take the narration away, you can kind of get those layers of meaning from it, if that makes sense. If you think all those things through, mm-hmm. I think at least.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a couple things to.
I mean, I'm also pretty sure I'm going to be spending a lot of money today.
It's probably a good time to mention that I do have that discount code.
Yeah, I've put it in the chat, and and Phil pasted over in the YouTube chat as well, so it's on both Twitch and YouTube, but it's Signum25 if you guys want a discount code from Jordan.
Yeah, that actually applies to everything in the store, so if you get a few things, it works.
Well, in a purely practical question, we've got a couple of those, if you don't mind me asking. How is it's not a, nothing gets sent to you in the mail. It's a digital download, right? So it's a thing that you...
I actually do have a physical USB that Corey maybe has.
I have the prop, yeah. Yeah. Check the, it's this beautiful wooden box, right? With like the beautiful flash drive inside. yeah. Very nice.
So you can get it just digitally, or you can get one of those as well, and I'll load it up.
That's right. So you got this like beautiful little flash drive here with it. Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Those are fun.
And then practicality of, is it your voice saying hit play now, or do you just start it when the book starts?
That's a really good question. So there's a few ways that you can do it, like we talked about. So you can just listen to it on its own, and it's worth talking about for a second that initially, when I first thought of the idea was that you would sit down with your book and open it up and read while you listen. And you can totally do that. It takes a little bit of understanding, maybe, to do that, because everyone that reads it, almost guaranteed, will read faster than Andy, because he's performing it. So mm-hmm. It's super slow, and he reads really slow anyways. So if you're listening, and the example that I always use is if you're reading along with the soundscape and you read that Tom Bombadil comes in through the door and you haven't heard that yet, then you just have to kind of sit and enjoy the soundscape, wait for him to come in, and then go on your way, you know, because right. You'll never be behind. You'll always be ahead. So you just gotta, you'd be like, oh, you know, this horn blew. I haven't heard it yet. You wait a bit, Boromir blows his horn, and then off you go. You know what I mean? So it takes a little bit of kind of understanding to do that, but that's one way. Listening on its own is one way. And when it comes to putting the two of them together, I have a how-to sync guide on my YouTube. But really, the files are designed that they're the exact same length, or the soundscape is a little bit longer because some of them have like a musical fade out that happens.
I was noticing that, Jordan. How you were talking about how you could ideally wish that you could put breaks in between the scenes
space.
And
yeah.
stuff, right? So I did notice that you you indulged yourself a little bit at the end of the chapters
and it does make sense though to have some of those, because it kind of leads you into the next chapter a little bit nicer. But yeah, so the files line up at the exact same start time. So you just, if you get any free audio software, you put the two of them together at the start, and then it would be like this. So if this is the soundscape here, this one, and then we have the narration underneath it, you just line them both up at the start, and then you would export it again, and you'd have the two of them combined. You wouldn't have to, I mean, you could adjust the volume if you want, but it's set up now so that it's what I would think as ideal. But I like the soundscape a little bit higher because I am not worried about hearing all the words all the time because I know them. But I didn't want to have that as the default because I know people need to hear the words, so. But yeah, it's really easy, and I've hopped on Zoom with a lot of people to help them if they need it, and things like that. So, and like I said, it lines up with either the Rob Inglis or the Circus version now. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty fun.
That is amazing.
I know I want to talk adaptation, but I'm just taken aback by all of this too.
Well, let's can we hear a few samples of the total product first? I know people would love to hear a little bit of it. And then we can talk some more.
I'm going to share... I'll share this one. This is a little... I think it's about 5 minutes, if that's okay.
Yeah.
It's going to run through the whole process of how this stuff is laying out. So before we start, we'll say again that if you don't have headphones, you literally will not hear the 3D effect of it. It just can't happen. That's right. All right. Are we ready?
Yes.
So let me know if you hear it.
This is why immersive audiobooks are the future. This is just a normal stereo version of my voice talking to you now. This is how audiobooks are normally delivered on Audible and all those other apps. But when we listen to a movie, things are a bit different. The dialogue would be coming from this center channel for the most part. This way, the dialogue can always be clear and precise in a channel almost exclusively meant for that. Now, when we're doing things in immersive audio instead of stereo, you can see that we have all of these other speakers around us. We have center, the left channel, the right channel, the left side channel, the right side channel, the left surround channel, the right surround channel, the top front left channel, the top front right channel, the top back left channel, the top back right channel. Having all of these different channels allows us to do so much more with the audio and create an amazing experience for an audiobook. Let's start by hearing the narration in the center channel.
He backed the wagon into the lane and turned it. Well, good night to you all, he said. It's been a queer day and no mistake. But all's well as ends well, though perhaps we should not say that until we reach our own doors. I'll not deny that I'll be glad now when I do. He lit his lanterns and got up. Suddenly, he produced a large basket from under the seat. I was nearly forgetting, he said. Mrs. Maggot put this up for Mr. Baggins with her compliments. He handed it down and moved off, followed by a chorus of thanks and good nights.
This is, of course, a sample for demonstration purposes of Andy Serkis narrating from his audiobook for The Lord of the Rings. The hobbits are just watching Farmer Maggot leave on his wagon. So I always like to start with the ambience. We'll set all of the static ambience that puts us in the environment. So that makes use of our top speakers and our rear speakers, but let's put some stuff in the side speakers. Let's put in the sounds of the wagon so that we can get the movement of that in there. Alright, great. Now we have the sounds of the horse that we should put in the front left and right channels. Now finally, we want to put the original score in there that I wrote. So I like to put this in side channels and then let the reverb expand it out to all of the other channels except for the center and the front left and right. Time to hear it all put together.
He backed the wagon into the lane and turned it. Well, good night to you all, he said. It's been a queer day and no mistake. But all's well as ends well. Though perhaps we should not say that until we reach our own doors. I'll not deny that I'll be glad now when I do. He lit his lanterns and got up. Suddenly, he produced a large basket from under the seat. I was nearly forgetting, he said. Mrs. Maggot put this up for Mr. Baggins with her compliments. He handed it down and moved off, followed by a chorus of thanks and good nights.
Wow.
That is so cool.
And that's one of the calm scenes.
Yes.
Just like the whole process, though, I just feel like it's blowing everybody's minds of like, just the fact that, I mean, just the fact that the narration comes from a center speaker, I feel like it's a big deal for people to clock into of like, you're being directed in this channel of sound, but then you show us all the other layers. Not only is that showing like the technical side of things, which is just fascinating because it's not, you know, my day to day, but the storytelling side, you're bringing all these things in and thinking about how we're going to absorb that sound and then attaching it to that narration that frankly now sounds really boring when it's just narration. Yeah. But we all thought it was really good when it was just narration.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, again, I'm thinking of all of the complexity which we were seeing in this like two-dimensional space, right, when we were mm-hmm. looking at the tracks. But of course, it's not just two-dimensional, it's three-dimensional, right? So thinking about how, in addition to all of the different, you know, cues and fades
the actual
and
elements themselves,
everything
yeah.
that's happening, yeah, you're also shaping that and moving it from one speaker to the
exactly,
other speaker.
Yeah.
I loved
yeah.
how you could hear, you could feel the wagon turning around and going the other way, like from one ear to the yeah. other. That is just incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like a whole conversation that we haven't had at all, which is the mixing part of it. You know, we've got all the sounds, we've got all the score written, it all sounds good, but then we have to place it all. And, you know, what moves, what doesn't move, because it can be distracting if everything is moving all the time, obviously. You never have the score move because we're not used to that in a movie, basically, is why.
Right.
But you can play with things, right? And you can play with distance and things like that, too. And I have a lot of software that I use to make things sound like they're a room away or two rooms away. Good example is in one of the Wheel of Time books, we're in one of the 200 inns that we go to. And, you know, we'll be in the main
in the eye of the
room.
World alone.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be in the main common room, and then we'll be up in their bedrooms, and then we'll be in the bathroom, and then we'll be in the kitchen, and then we'll be in the library. And those all have five different ambiences where elements are distant or closer or things like that. So yeah, a lot brought into it to try and, again, make it feel like each one of these things is different or changing or things like that. So yeah, the mixing is a whole other side of it. And there's the practical side of it, which is, you know, arrows flying over you, that's what it would be like. And then back to the question of like, okay, but do we hear the arrows right now or not? Right. Stylistically speaking, you know.
Could we hear a bit of the Pelennor Field to sort of see how all of that stuff goes together?
Yeah. It'll give me a second to get it up, though. I'm not going to be able to open the session and play it because Zoom does not like to play with that, but yeah. I'll play just the soundscape version of this, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Jordan, we'll take anything at this point. This is amazing. Have I mentioned? Oh yeah, I need my headphones again.
Did we hear that? I won't screen share, I'll just share audio. So this is a good one to show because it's so sound effects heavy. There's a tiny mm-hmm. bit of score at the beginning, and then after that it's sound effects until the Witch King shows up, I think, is when the score comes back.
So where in the chapter are we starting here?
Right at the start. The description of what's happening. It's a long description. At Andy Serkis. That's a good example of what a sound effects heavy moment is like, for sure. And again, that's, you know, there's a lot of description happening at the beginning of that, so there's not room for too much specifics to be happening, and then those will come later. Now, I will play one other sample if you want. And this one, I think, I don't know if you've heard this before, Corey, but this is from The Choices of Master Samwise.
Ah.
And it's a little bit of a longer sample, but it's a little bit of a longer sample. It's hard to not play the whole thing. But I think this was a lot of fun to score because it's, you know, the huge orchestra of Shelob versus the small trumpet of Sam. And so this was an example. There's Shelob sound effects, of course, which were actually performed by one of my Kickstarter people also, doing hisses and things, which is awesome. But the music is the focus for this scene. And so we'll hear the big orchestra of Shelob versus the small Sam, and then you'll hear Sam's orchestra be triumphant later on in the sample. So let's have a listen to this one. Some Shelob. And Sam should come in here soon.
The squelching sounds.
love those spider sands. So that continues for a bit, but I'll skip ahead a little bit. Because there's a whole, like, talk about Shelob, I think, that happens.
Right, right.
A little bit later on. We'll also hear the resonance of the viol a little bit. And here's the elvish harmony underneath. It's a little bit of inspiration.
So that melody in the background is the file of Galadriel?
Well, there's harmony that's the history of the elves, and then you'll hear one of those resonating bowls is the vial sound.
Okay.
And it'll swell up more as we go.
Were you blending like a Hobbit and Elf orchestra there?
Yeah, so the choir, like there's no, until Barad-dûr collapses, there's no real Hobbit melodies being sung by a choir. So yeah, the Elvish harmony and history of the Elves theme was there. And we heard the Samwise the Brave rendition of Sam's music that you might and probably would have heard in some of the chapters that you've, you know, a very lighthearted version of that a lot earlier. So it was a lot of fun writing these kind of different iterations of the themes over time, or just changing the instrumentation of them as we progress and things like that. So. Yeah.
I also loved watching, you know, while listening to that, because you could tell you knew it, you're getting into it, and yeah. even to you, it's still it telling well. A story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was thinking, I'm like, okay, I have a new, like, next level Tolkien trivia game I want to play, where we, like, play a snippet,
play a sample
of
play
the sample. And like and just say what scene is this, and then like ideally, like, I was thinking of like when we were getting the sound effects of Sheila moving. I'm like, okay, which sentence
is that? Right, exactly. Yeah. Like,
can I come up with the quote that is exactly like happening? And that's yeah, like that's fun.
And I bet you could. I mean, this feels like a game I could at least host, and the two of you are the contenders. Gordon is right.
I don't think I get to play.
I think you get there's to tell this, us. Correct
there, there's this one scene in what chapter is it? Where Frodo didn't offer her any tea.
Oh yeah,
whatever
that's,
chapter
that's,
that is.
Yeah, it's at the end of chapter one. Yeah, with yeah, Lobelia. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, there's like a little musical thing that I did there because I have like a Sackful Bagginses melody, right. And it makes me laugh every single time without the narration at all because I know exactly what that is. It's so funny. So it's a lot of fun hearing a lot of those little things that I know for sure what they are.
Yeah,
and you know. Hints of Gollum's theme in Shadow of the Past, chapter that'll come mm-hmm. back later, things like that, you know. And they, again, we're just talking about one element of the whole mm-hmm. production. So,
how long does this take you? And I realize that's a difficult question, but like, you know, you just did the first Harry Potter. This is a long 3-book series. You're working on multiple series here.
Yeah. It's definitely tricky to answer that question because the more time I have, the better I can make it. So, but, you know, if we want to go in general, it took me a year and a half to finish The Lord of the Rings, which was too little time, but still. So if we think about it, if a chapter is an hour long, I have to listen to it one time through to lay out everything, where everything's going to go. I have to put the sound effects in, which isn't going to take the whole time because it's not an hour's worth of sound effects, hopefully. But it balances out to roughly that because if you have a Pelennor chapter, that's like way more than the one right. listen through.
Yeah.
So let's say an hour. And then if you average an hour for each one of the tasks, it might end up being like 7 or 8 hours for one chapter. And then, you know, there's things like, okay, it's all done. I have to listen to it, though. And make sure it's good. You know, that's another 63 hours at least that I have to do.
Right.
Right.
Because, you know, as egotistical as this might sound, it has to be me that checks them because I'm kind of the only person that knows what I'm, especially from the 3D point of view, I'm the only one that will know if it's wrong
mm-hmm.
or if it's not doing what I told it to do, which can happen sometimes on the renders. It'll not take the automation that I did or something like that. And so I have to be the one that listens to it. And ideally, I'll have time to listen to just the ambient version and then just the score version to make sure all of those work on their own. So a lot of time is the answer to that. One of the things that I did want to point out, though, is if people go to my website, like The Eye of the World is up there for pre-order and The Hobbit and Silmarillion and the first Game of A Song of Ice and Fire book. Those pre-orders are what let me spend more time on these things. I've said to, you know, the Hobbit and the Silmarillion were my second Kickstarter, so those are going to be done regardless. I'm going to do the Eye of the World, or I'm going to do the Wheel of Time because I want it for myself, and even if it takes forever. But things like Harry Potter and Song of Ice and Fire and how fast these come out is totally dependent on how much time I can spend on them because this is, you know, I have a couple of private lessons that I teach, music lessons, but this is what I do with my time. So the more I can spend on it, the faster things can come around. So
that's awesome.
I can't wait till Signum Studios can work with you is all I'm
going to say. Well, man, we don't have enough time, but I want to think about stories.
Yeah, can this just be part one and we're bringing you back soon? Like, we have 9 minutes to actually talk to you. But
oh, no.
Can we have you around again?
Happy
please
to come
over
back and do a part two of
yeah
of analysis.
If yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That's way better than like trying to force in of some of the many questions that I've been that I'm wanting to ask here now.
This is the least we've talked for an episode of Other Minds. Oh, no.
Yes, that's true. That's
including
true.
John Howe.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, it's really incredible. So it's one of the things that strikes me as really remarkable about this, that is really remarkable as a creative project, is on the one hand, you're doing adaptation. On the other hand, what you're doing is tied to the original text with an intimacy that no other adaptation medium that I know of is, or even can be, really. And so that's one of the things that's really fascinating to me, the way in which this is, on the one hand, there is no question, as we can tell from when we're listening to the track on its own, there is an independent like storytelling that you are doing in the soundscape, and yet it's also, as I say, it is bound to the original in these sort of unique ways. Mm-hmm. Are there times that you've already mentioned one way, the pauses that you wish you could add to the audiobooks. One way in which sometimes that's like difficult or a sort of an uncomfortable constraint in that way. Are there other ways or other moments when that kind of thing comes in?
I kind of enjoy having to stick to the spaces that the audiobook gives me, because again, like you say, it's like this is the version mm-hmm. of the story. So anytime I like putting things at the end of the chapter because that makes sense. But in general, I try to, because I could break it up. And that would be nicer and easier for me, but that instantly makes it not the
right,
real thing,
it.
Quotation
yeah.
mark.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy the challenge of being like, okay, this narrator has this kind of rhythm. How do I fit what I want into it? And it's lucky that Andy performs it so much because it does leave space in some areas. You know, like the Tree Bear chapter is 2 hours long, and his version is 40 minutes longer than Rob Inglis's, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But so when he's doing the march of the ants at the end, it's really slow and methodical, and that leaves a lot of room for me to do things. Now, the inverse challenge of that is you'll get descriptions where this thing happened, and it's taken like a paragraph to describe it, but the sound would be like instant. So where do you put the sound? Do you put it at the end of the paragraph? Do you put it, I gotta think about that kind of thing. And that happens a lot in the Wheel of Time because we get this description of the magic being used and then it happens.
Yes.
So where, and a lot of the time when there's things like that, it's the music that will help me bridge the gap to the event happening. So I think that happens a lot in Return of the King, mostly, of the three. Because in Fellowship, it's a lot of immediate stuff. But as we get further, we get kind of further away from the action as well. It's a lot less right up front with you.
How about the two versions? I mean, we talk a lot about adaptation from text to film. You're talking about text to text to voice, like it's a very different way of thinking of adaptation, but it's the exact same story told two different ways, which does change how you tell that story.
And you've been doing the same thing with the Harry Potter also, right? The Jim Dale readings and the Stephen Fry.
So the Harry Potter ones are a lot easier because they are, Stephen Fry is really inconsistent with his speed. It's really interesting to see, actually, because some chapters will be way longer than Jim Dale, and some of them will be shorter. Some of them will be almost exactly the same length. And so it's easier, though, because they're not 40 minutes shorter on some chapters. So it is different, but the way that it's different, I think, is just how the timbre of their voice sits in the score or sits in the sound effects. And it's I haven't run into any issues with that yet. It will be very interesting to do it with Wheel of Time because it's two narrators,
right?
Male and female narrator. So I'll probably score things based off of that, because when you're speaking, you have a loosely a key that you speak in. And so if you, like, when I was lucky that when I wrote the music with Andy, D major, which is the key that all of the Howard Shore music mostly is written in, that we're all familiar with, it fit well with Andy's voice. So I could use that same key and write my own music, and it felt familiar to a movie audience that way. But yeah, it'll be interesting with Wheel of Time to play around with making it sit nicely. But I do a lot of that just based off of feel, you know. Does it sound good or not? That's the that's the question.
Right, right. There was a practical question about music recordings. Do you do how much? I mean, you mentioned like your you know, your friend who plays the mandolin and your recording. So, how much live recording of the music do you do? How much of it is synthetic? Yeah. How do you balance that?
Tricky question, because I have guest musicians that are part of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings and The Silmarillion. And so, for example, Rebecca Rovney is my go-to solo violinist. You should definitely check out her channel. But she played all of the Eucatastrophe theme moments on solo violin. So there's a theme for Eucatastrophe that comes up when it should. And she is the solo player that plays that. She also played all the Gollum themes. Phil played the mandolin, and Betsy played the harp parts, things like that. So whereas the orchestra, obviously I don't have access to a full orchestra, as awesome as that would be, but at the same time, saying it's synthetic is not really accurate, because it's real players that have had their samples recorded, and it's programmed to play it naturally. So it is real players, but I've written it in the computer. But yeah, so it's also a bit tricky, because with Lord of the Rings, I've been trying to follow the outline instrumentally that has been given to us by Howard Shore or by John Williams or whoever it is that did that kind of, because it's like, you don't try to rewrite Star Wars music, you know, you follow it, what he did. And, you know, trying to add to it. And so when it comes to Lord of the Rings, I'm not, you know, playing guitar. I'm not playing instruments that don't necessarily belong in that orchestral palette that he put in the movies. But when I get to Wheel of Time, like, I'm a guitarist, so I'll be able to add in those kind of instruments more and play with it. So it's very, like, Harry Potter is a very classical orchestra. Lord of the Rings is not, but it's not like a modern movie Hans Zimmer thing either. And one of my favorite guest musicians was a woman named Rachel, who played the Hardanger fiddle for the Rohan themes. So you'll hear exactly like that kind of twang, I guess you could say, in the movies. She played all that stuff. And it was really fun, because I sent her my Rohan themes and I said, can you play this as if it was more in the style of your instrument, because she knows what that means, you know, to play it in its more kind of classic rendition on that instrument. So she sent back these amazing versions of the themes that I wrote, but with, you know, that kind of twist on them. So it was, you know, less live instruments than I would have hoped, but it's kind of what I can manage, you know. And the sample libraries that I use are really, really, really good. So, yeah.
I like the organicness of that, though, too, that you're letting her put her creative stamp on it, because she knows that element the same way a director would ask that of his actor.
Yeah. And there was a few moments where I would send a sample to Rebecca and I would say, play something for this. And that's what she did for when Gollum goes over the edge. I had a score written and I said, can you just play what you think might work here? and there's some moments like that that we had fun. Mm. Just getting, because I love playing that way. I love just reacting to the scenario on my instrument. I just can't do that for this because I don't play the right instruments. But I wanted to pass that to her to see what she did with it. And that's really just it. Just see what happens, see what you end up with, for sure.
Wow. Wonderful.
I'm hesitant to ask anything else because it's just going to open a can of worms. But as long as you promise to come back, we'll do this again. Yeah.
I know we didn't get into the adaptation discussion too much. So
yeah, exactly. Think of more. No,
but
about...
I think we needed this foundation.
Yeah.
Really launch off of it.
Yeah, especially since, as I say, this what you do, Jordan, is unlike anything I've seen anyone do. So, just kind of trying to spend this session wrapping our heads around what it is, you know, about your creative art here, and then you know, talking about it and thinking it through. This is why, I mean, it was easier, it was simpler talking to John Howe because we knew what he did. Right? So, and we already had some of his pictures, you know, so it was yeah. But
yeah, that's the hardest part of the soundscape, it seems, is because there's a tendency for people to be like, oh, so you put some music in? Like, well, no. Yes, but yeah, no. What's a little bit more than that.
What's your like elevator pitch line? Like, how do you briefly explain something?
The easiest way is to say it's like a movie in your ears. Mm. And yeah, saying that it's all chapter specific is a big thing, and moment to moment specific. But yeah, I've been trying to condense it, you know, to a short video or something like that. To be able to show people, but really you have to listen to it to be able to grasp it.
Ironically, it kind of reminds me of a problem that I've often had with Signum. Like when we launched Signum in 2011, you know, I'd be like, well, there, you know, we do online classes, and people be like, oh yeah, I know what you mean. And I'm like, actually, I don't think you do know. Like, like when I say that, you think you know what I'm doing, but you don't really know what I'm doing. I'm sure you have totally. The same thing. Like I'm making a, you know, like, soundtrack accompaniment to the audiobooks, and people are probably like, oh yeah, sure, no, that makes sense, I know, but they don't have any idea what you're actually
and meanwhile I'm like fretting over like how many horses like in this scene, and they're like, oh, you put some horse sounds, that's cool.
Yes, should I have 27 or 38 horses,
and on which speaker, and are they in front of the trebuchets?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, very cool. So just end by kind of naming some topics that we want to come back to at the end. One of the thing that really interests me, the metaphor of film is one that you've been using, right? That it's like film. And yet I would love to think a little bit more about some of the similarities and differences there between the kind of experience. Because there are clearly similarities, but there are also very clearly differences between creating the immersive experience that a film offers compared to the immersive experience that you're doing there. Several different kinds of differences, I think, that would be really interesting. And then thinking about narrative relationships, right? The story that you're telling and the relationship between, you know, again, that's so intimately tied to that, and yet it also, as you say, like, can stand on its own entirely itself. And what are the, you know, thinking about that in a sense sort of more purely as adaptation, with you taking the story and you can just play the soundscape and say, okay, this is my adaptation of the story.
Lord of the Rings.
So anyway, there's a lot in those things to kind of think through and talk about, as well as kind of drilling down to some of the particular elements and some of the decisions that you're making about balancing and movement and things like that and all those things.
And there's a whole other conversation that we can have about taking inspiration from movie sound design and then purposefully not doing that, or what does the Balrog sound like, or how, I mean, when they made the movies, the technology is different from what I have now. So the ways that I could get those sounds is totally different. So there's plenty to talk about for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, audience expectation was one of my topics of just like the engagement side of it, of the listening along with the narration versus having it for your own experience. Like, that's really interesting. But then also, yeah, recreating these sounds that are so iconic because we know the film so well, that's what's in your brain. How do you adjust that? So add that to the list.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and I would like to also just talk about the I can share some of my own experience of like listening to this. And because I've been really struck, I'm going through the whole book for the first time with it. I've heard bits and snippets. I've admired what you've done in a sense from afar, but I've never really had the time to go through and listen through the whole thing. And so I'd come to the point where I'm like, well, it's time to do my reread of The Lord of the Rings again. And I'm like, okay, this time I'm going to do it with the soundscape all the way through. And I have been struck by what a remarkably different experience it is.
You notice things that you didn't know, you didn't notice. And it's things like, we'll get into it more next time, but the kind of vividness that I can see some of these things now is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And it's in some ways, you know, even going through Harry Potter or The Isle of World, it's like, you know, did I read this book before? There's a couple moments there where you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And cause I'm thinking about, you know, the distance of things, you know, like the example that I use a lot is when you're with Frodo and Boromir at the end of book two, how loud is the waterfall, you know, things like that are all things that I'm trying to think of. And then again, taking that back to the creative part of, do we want to hear it even if we should hear it? Things like that. So
yeah
it's definitely a new, hopefully a new experience.
Yeah,
a new way of experiencing it.
Definitely.
I mean, I think if you have Corey Olson telling you that he's finding new things,
right? Well, it's just it's a completely different kind of experience. Like it's, yeah. I mean, I think so. Like my spoiler version of the thing is that I. To me, listening to an audiobook is reading. And actually, Jordan, it'd be interesting to talk with you in general about audiobook as adaptation, as you are like, because of course, audiobook is not the, but of course, guess what? The printed book is also not the thing that was in Tolkien's head either. so like there is an element of adaptation in every presentation of the text actually. But anyway, it's, but I have felt it to be a totally different kind of thing. When I'm listening to an audiobook, like a normal audiobook, that's reading to me. Like I'm reading. And as I've been listening to the audiobook with the soundscape, even though I'm listening literally to the same recording of the audiobook I've been listening to for years, it's a different, it isn't only just like, oh, like my reading has been enriched. Like, I don't feel like I'm reading. Like, I'm experiencing it differently than, and that has been so striking to me as I've been going through. So, anyway, so yeah, there's lots more to talk about. So we'll definitely have you back to have some more of this discussion.
Look forward to it. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Very good. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. So, and just to, I know we've been posting links and stuff, but I just want, I know a lot of people will be listening to this. So, of course, it would be particularly ironic to neglect the audio only version people in this show, particularly. So, JordanRennells.com. So that's Jordan, JORDAN, Rennells, RANNELLS. JordanRennells.com is where you can find all of Jordan's stuff. And again, the discount code for listeners to this is Signum25. So put in Signum25 and you can get a discount on anything you would like to purchase or pre-order from Jordan stuff. And certainly strongly support the pre-ordering. So
my shopping cart is currently very full.
Wait. That's awesome. No, yeah. Thank you so much. And like I said, I just want to keep being able to do this kind of thing. And also, you know, we'll get into this more next time, but if you prefer the Spanish audiobooks or if you prefer the French audiobooks, I'd love to retime it to that eventually. And, you know, what an experience that would be in terms of, you know, okay, I don't really know this language fully, but I know the soundscape now, so I know what's happening. And so what a kind of language learning tool that can be. So all of the support that I can get leads to further and further iterations of it.
Amazing.
Yeah, and also if people are listening in the future, and Corey, if you're listening, and you hear something that you're like, I don't know about this, or we should hear this, or we should not hear this sound, etc. You know, I'd love hearing those emails so that I can add it to my list of changes to make, because it's my project, but it's, I'd love it to be a progressing thing that can improve and improve and improve. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Well, thank you so much, Jordan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we should be back next week. So we'll see everybody in a week. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.